Beloved Bhagwan, Ajaku said, "Let each and every one of you turn the light inwards upon himself and not try to memorize my words. Since time without beginning, you have turned your back upon the light and run after darkness. The habits of erroneous thinking are so deep-rooted in you that it would be extremely difficult to uproot them overnight. This is why one is compelled to resort to the use of make-believe expedients in order to strip you of your crude ways of thinking. This is on a par with what a parent sometimes would do in order to stop his little child from crying, giving him some yellow leaves, making believe that they are precious coins. It is also like a man setting up a store stocked with all kinds of goods for daily use, as well as articles of gold and jade to accommodate customers of different abilities. As I have often said, Sakito's is a gold shop, while mine is a general store, selling all and sundry. But business depends on demand. If there is no demand, there is no business. If I deal only with the essence of meditation, I would be left all alone. Even a single companion would be hard to get, to say nothing of a community of 500 or 700 monks. If, on the other hand, I talk about things of East and West, people would come in flocks, pricking up their ears to catch every bit of my tales. That would be like showing an empty fist to little children, pretending that there are candies in it. This is just humbug. Now, let me tell you in all plainness, do not divert your mind to the holy things. Rather, direct it to your self-nature and cultivate yourself with your feet on the ground. Do not desire the 3 gifts of vision and the 6 supernatural powers. Why? Because these are only accidentals of holiness. The one thing essential now is to recollect your mind to attain the fundamental, the very root of your being. Having arrived at the root, you need have no worry about the accidentals. In time, you will find that you are provided with all these accidental gifts and powers. On the other hand, so long as you have not got at the root, you will not be able to acquire such gifts and powers through study and learning."
Manisha, today we start a new series, Zen Turning In. Basically, there is only one way of discovering the Buddha, the truth of your very being. But there are thousands of people with different states of consciousness, Hence for them, different devices, different small streets joining to the main way have to be created. That's what all the Zen masters in these 1400-year long history have been trying very diligently. No one is being left. Everyone is shown a way that may fit him. But finally, whatever fits you will lead you to the ultimate way, turning in. Every device is dedicated to a simple task of turning in. As the situation is, man is born with 5 senses which all go outwards. Nature has not given you a special sense that goes inwards. Your eyes open outward. If you close, there is only darkness. Or even with closed eyes, you will see things of the outside world as imagination, as dreams. Ears can hear only the music that comes from the outside. It knows nothing about the music that is continuously happening within you. Nobody is born with the ear to hear the inner music. Your hands stretch outside. Even the smallest child starts grabbing outside things. Obviously, this state of affairs, that all our senses open outwards, has been exploited. We have been given every kind of theology, religion, truth, from the outside, because that is what we are demanding. We want a God to be there above in the sky. We want anything, and immediately there will be a supplier. You just have to ask and somebody will create a system of beliefs to satisfy you. Zen cuts all this rubbish like a sharp sword in one single blow. It has nothing to do with anything that takes you away from you. It may be God, it may be hell, it may be heaven. All kinds of rewards and all kinds of fears about punishment. All the religions are living on the exploitation of your senses because they open outwards. The work of a real master is to close all these doors so that your life energy, your consciousness does not leak out. There is no naturally given way to go inwards, but it is not needed. If enough consciousness is gathered in, it will create its own way. Just as water creates its own way. No map, no guidelines, just enough quantity. And the water will start flowing towards an unknown sea. He has never heard about it. He knows nothing where he is going. The same is true about consciousness. Enough consciousness gathered inside immediately makes a way upon which nobody has ever trodden. It starts moving inwards. Outward senses are closed. That's what I mean when I say in your meditations, close your eyes. Let the body completely left, because all the senses are joined with the body. Just be a watcher of the mind, so mind cannot take your energy outside. Body and mind both closed. Energy gathers upon its own self spontaneously. And at a certain point, it starts moving inwards. You don't have to do anything except closing all the doors that lead you away from yourself. It is one of the most simplest things because you don't have to do it. But just because of its simplicity, its obviousness, it has become difficult, the most difficult, because nobody can teach you. Nobody can indicate you where to move, how to move. The master can create only a situation in which the spontaneous movement of the energy will happen. That's what I call meditation. It is not your doing. You have to stop doing everything. It is your non-doing. And the moment when you are not doing, all your energy that was involved in doing thousand and one things is released. It gathers to a point where it starts flowing inwards, and the innermost center is not far away. Meditation is, in a way, going beyond nature. Hence it is called transcendental. Nature has not provided any way automatic, just as he has provided eyes, hands, ears. It has not provided any way that your energy will go in. Meditation is transcending the natural gifts, moving beyond nature. It is not against nature, it is simply towards a greater nature. More overwhelming, more universal. And once you have found the way and you have touched your own being, you have gone through a magic. You will never be the same person again. Not only that, the world that surrounds you will never be the same again. Your love will have now a new fragrance. Not the old possessiveness, domination. Your friendship will be more friendliness than friendship. It will not have any bondage, any conditionings. Your vision of the world will become immensely intense and sharp. You will see things which have been there always present, but you were not present. Each flower is showing something of the divine. Each star is shining. Showing something of the divine, the whole existence in its multitude expressions is showing only the divine, but you will recognize it only on condition if you have recognized it within yourself. Then you know that your center is not only your center, it is the center of the whole universe. We are all joined in this center. It is said about Bacon, a great scientific thinker, perhaps the most important, because he turned the whole human mind from religion to science. He used to say, if I can find the center of the world, I can move the world according to me. But he never found the center of the world. And I say unto you, he has never heard that in the East we have been searching not the center of the world, but the center of ourselves. And finding the center of ourselves, we have found the center of the universe. But then the desire to change drops. The universe is so beautiful, nothing is needed to be changed. Everything has to be rejoiced and celebrated. These statements of a great master Ijaku are very fundamental. Ijaku said, let each and every one of you turn the light inwards upon himself and not try to memorize my words. Only a very great master can say that. Don't bother about my words, because they don't contain the truth. No word can contain. So don't memorize them. I'm saying to you, that turn in. But you can do two things. You can memorize the word turn in. And you can do another thing. Existentially, you can turn in. That's what Ijaku is saying. I'm saying these words to you not to memorize my words. Since time without beginning, you have turned your back upon the light and run after darkness. The habits of erroneous thinking are so deep-rooted in you that it would be extremely difficult to uproot them overnight. It is obviously true. But with great respect to Ijaku, I disagree. How many lives you may have been wandering outside, it does not matter. You can come to yourself in a single moment. It is just like a man asleep. Maybe anywhere in the world, visiting Moscow or Peking, or Tokyo, are going to the moon. Just wake him up. Do you think he will say, wait, I have to catch a train to come back from Tokyo or from Moscow? I have to take a plane. I cannot just wake up immediately. He does not say that. He simply wakes up and wonders. Instantaneously, the projection is a dream. All our projections of greed, lust, power, anger are projections. Ijaku is right as a common sense approach, but I don't agree because I know you can be a Buddha this very moment. All the wanderings in past lives into darkness cannot prevent you. It is saying like a room has been dark for centuries and you bring a small candle light. The darkness cannot say that I will not go so immediately. I have been here occupying this room for centuries. It goes against the constitution of India. You cannot throw away the occupant in a single moment. Go through a proper way. First, go to the court. Claim that you have the right. But the darkness does not say anything. You just bring a small candle and the darkness disappears. In fact, the darkness has no substance. It is an absence. So when you bring the light, the absence disappears. It was the absence of the light. If you can go in, pushing aside the whole crowd of habits, just like an arrow with force gathering your whole energy inwards, you can prove Ijaku wrong. Although what he is saying is out of compassion. And perhaps most people will have to follow what he is saying. The habits of erroneous thinking are so deep-rooted in you that it would be extremely difficult to uproot them overnight. I say unto you, it is extremely simple to throw them this very moment. Those habits have been formed in darkness, in unconsciousness. They don't have any substance in them. I was talking to a friend. He was a professor in the same university I was. And he was continuously harassing me that do something, I want to drop this habit of smoking. Many times I try, 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, and then it becomes too much. The urge that I think that it is better to have a cigarette and next time we will try in better conditions. Right now I am too tense. So many times I have decided, but it fails. Every time, rather than being a success, it has been a failure. and now it has become written in my memory that you cannot succeed. Just show me the way how to drop it. I said, are you ready? He said, I am ready to do anything. Then I said, do one thing. Come with me to my home. And I will not let you out until this habit is gone. He said, what do you mean? Are you going to torture me or something? I said, no torture, just chain smoking. Sitting before me, you have to smoke to your heart's content. He said, I have never heard such a thing from anybody. I have been talking about dropping this habit. I said, you have been bragging all this talk about dropping this habit. It's just a strategy of the mind to brag that I am trying, but what to do? But today you are caught in a lion's den. Just come and sit behind in my car and forget the world. On the way, we will purchase cigarettes as many as the car can contain. He said, my God, you will kill me. I said, it does not matter. Either you will leave dead or you will leave the habit. Hesitantly, afraid, he said, I always have heard that you are a little strange type. But I have never thought that just telling you I will get trapped. Do you really mean? I said, just sit down in the car. And on the way, I fill the whole car . He was looking at me and he said, what are you doing? That much smoking will kill me. I said, there is no way now. Chain smoking means chain smoking. When you drop one cigarette, immediately take another. Take the fire from the first cigarette to the second cigarette. And I will be watching. Just after 3-4 packets, he said, can I go home? I said, no way. Either your dead body will go get out, or you have to drop the habit that you have been bragging about. He said, I promise. I said, I don't want to interfere into anybody else's life, but you offered yourself. He burned his lips, he burned his hands. It must have taken about 6 hours And after 6 hours he was so tired, smoking and smoking. And a crowd of the neighbors gathered. And they started talking, is this man mad or something? And all over cigarettes and ash. Finally he said, let me go. I said, I will not let you go. Do you see my God? He will put you back in your place. And if you don't smoke, he will force you to smoke. This time or never. He said, it is better I drop this habit. But let me go home. I said, be a man of word. If you are found smoking again, you will have to commit suicide. Harakiri. A man of word has no other way. If he goes against his word, he has to commit harakiri. He said, I promise, I will commit harakiri, but at least right now, let me go home. I have followed him many days. He tried to escape. He won't look at me. But when I take something into my hand, I do it. I used to go every day to his home to ask his wife how things are going. She was, of course, on my side. She was my detective in the home. Even small children of the poor professor, all were working for me. They will say, uncle, you have done a miracle. He is so afraid even to mention the name of cigarette. He starts perspiring. That experience you have given him, since that experience, we don't know what experience, he simply says, since that experience, I am finished, because that man is so dangerous. If I even touch a cigarette, he will force me to commit harakiri. And I want to live, cigarette or no cigarette. The question is, if you have really decided if you are in an honest search for yourself, then you can prove Ijaku wrong. And I would like you to prove him wrong, although he is making a very common sense statement. Ordinarily, it takes life to drop old habits. But that simply means you are not really wanting to drop. If you want to drop, it takes only a single moment, because all old habits are your own projections. This is why one is compelled to resort to the use of make-believe expedients in order to strip you of your crude ways of thinking. This is on a par with what a parent sometimes would do in order to stop his little child from crying, giving him some yellow leaves, making believe that they are precious coins. It is also like a man setting up a store stocked with all kinds of goods for daily use, as well as articles of gold and jade, to accommodate customers of different abilities. As I have often said, Sekito is a gold shop. While mine is a general store, Sekito is here sitting in front of me, behind the camera, in this new reincarnation. He is called Niskriya, the stone head. Sekito means the stone head. He was a great master. Ijaku says that Sekito has a gold shop. Very refined people can become his disciples. Ordinary ones are simply thrown out, given a good beating. They never come back to Sekito's temple. Only very rare, extraordinary seekers will get all the beatings but will not leave the steps. Sometimes it happens a person may sit there for months before Sekito will allow him to come in. It may be raining, it may be winter, it may be summer. But unless Sekito is convinced that the man has a will, that he has not come just out of curiosity. In every way he wants to seek and search himself. While mine is a general store, selling and all and sundry, Ijaku was a different kind of master. Not hard, he never hit anybody. He never slapped any disciple. Naturally, he attracted the wishy-washy people. But in a general store, you cannot find great shopkeepers like Avirbhava. Now she has gone to Hong Kong to find other gods worshipped in the past, because there is going to be a fear of toys. She is not here today. Yesterday she did her show of the great rat. Now she has gone in search of finding something even greater. Ijaku is saying that I serve all and sundry, even the curious ones are accepted. One never knows. Today the person may be curious, tomorrow he may become really longing. A chance has to be given. Both are right. Sekito works on the very special ones. Ijaku works on everyone of any category. Both are needed. If I deal only with the essence of meditation, I would be left all alone. To deal with the essence of meditation alone, that's what I am doing. But even dealing only with meditation, I don't have a general store. I have my ways of choosing the best and the most intelligent just by my words. It is enough that those who are curious will not stay here. There is nothing for them here. Those who have stayed with me have stayed because they started feeling the essence of meditation slowly, slowly, like a cool breeze or a full moon night or a rose flower in all its beauty. They have found something, and now they are certain there is much more. This certainty creates trust, and without this trust, Ijaku is right. If a man simply deals with meditation, he will be left alone. Because who wants meditation? And when there is no demand, what is the point of keeping the store open? I have tried in a unique way to call forth from all over the world the most intelligent ones. I am not alone. Not only that you are here, There are 2 million people around the earth who are meditating, whose only concern is meditation. In life, everything has become meaningless. But Ijaku is making a common sense statement. If you deal only with meditation, people will desert you. Seeing this, masters deal with scriptures, mantras, to keep you engaged. Someday may be the right moment that you can be introduced into meditation. I am totally different from Sekito or Ijaku. Although I am doing the same work, but neither I hit you, neither I push you away, neither I wait I make the atmosphere available to you of all kinds of people. In this atmosphere, can have a little experience. And that little experience starts growing just like a seed in a huge cedar, aspiring for the stars. Those who were more concerned with non-essentials have come and gone. In these 30 years, thousands of people have passed but now, as we are coming to the most precious experience deeper and deeper, only those who are authentically interested in digging gold have remained. Now this assembly has become one of the greatest assembly of seekers that has ever been on the earth. Ijaku says, if I deal only with the essence of meditation, I would be left all alone. Ordinarily, that is true. Even a single companion would be hard to get, to say nothing of a community of 500 or 700 monks. If, on the other hand, I talk about things of East and West, people would come in flocks, pricking up their ears to catch every bit of my tales. That would be like showing an empty fist to a little children, pretending that there are candies in it. This is just humbug. He is very honest. He is saying that I have to create all kinds of things But all those things are just humbug. Just as you can engage a child with toys and he forgets that he was crying, you can engage thousands of people. In fact, they are engaged. What the churches are doing, what the synagogues are doing, what the temples are doing, dealing with non-essentials, and flocks of millions of people, and these holy places, and these so-called great priests, go on watching what is the need of the people. They immediately supply their needs. So they remain entangled in the net of Hinduism or Christianity or Judaism. I have heard that three rabbis were talking about their congregations. The first rabbi said, "My congregation is the most up-to-date. You can even smoke cigarettes inside the synagogue. You can play cards and gamble." The second one said, "That is nothing. In my synagogue, I have already entered 21st century. People can make love and do whatever they want to do. They can drink wine. They can dance. After all, one has to have a congregation, otherwise we will lose our profession, our salaries. So whatever they want to do, let them do." The third one said, "That is nothing. In my synagogue, there is a board in front of the synagogue on which it is written that on Sundays and on all Jewish holidays, this synagogue is closed." What more do you want? This is the most ultra-modern. People are happily, very much joyous to be members of a synagogue which is always closed, which does not bother you at all with old sermons. But all the religions have been keeping people engaged with the non-essentials, Ijaku is very sincere. He said, "It is not in my capacity to deal only with the essential Zen. I know that I will not find even a single companion. So I go on giving them devices, scriptures, mantras, and all kinds of things, a general store. But it is all humbug. Do you know what humbug means? It was Charles Darwin's 60th birthday. And he was very friendly with children. So all the children of the neighborhood decided great, precious presents will be coming to the great scientist. We poor children, what we can do? But something has to be presented to the great scientist who is our friend. So one small boy came up with a great idea and they managed it. They found all kinds of insects because that was the interest of Charles Darwin. Working out his theory of evolution, he was looking into insects, into animals, into every place. So what they did, they cut those insects and made a new insect. The body of one insect, the legs of another, the face of the third, the tail of the fourth. And they made it so perfectly and beautifully that anybody could be deceived. And they brought their present to the great Darwin and asked him, "Uncle, can you say what it is? You are such a great scientist, you must know the name." He looked and he could not think. He has never come across such an insect. He looked again and again. And then finally he saw that it is not one insect. Legs are different, the tail is different, the head is different, but the boys have done a great artistic job. So he said, "This is humbug." Its name is humbug. Most of the people are humbugs. They are carrying something from somebody, something from somebody else. They are not themselves. They are many people, a multitude. They are a crowd. Now let me tell you in all plainness, says Ijaku, do not divert your mind to the holy things. Rather direct it to your self nature and cultivate yourself with your feet on the ground. Do not desire the three gifts of vision and the six supernatural powers. Why? Because these are only accidentals of holiness. The one thing essential now is to recollect your mind to attain the fundamental, the very root of your being. Having arrived at the root, you need have no worry about the accidentals. All the virtues come on their own as you become conscious. So don't cultivate those virtues. They will be artificial and they will become preventive. Hindrances on the way to your own self. Don't ask for miracles. A man of meditation is a miracle himself. Whatever he does is a miracle. It is a beauty. It is magic. But it is all spontaneous. It is not practiced. It is not rehearsed. But most of the people are interested in supernatural powers. Healing people with supernatural powers. Are creating things out of nothing. Just as Satya Sai Baba is doing. All kinds of frauds. But people become interested in them. Thinking that here is a man of miracles. And what is the miracle? If you can produce a Swiss watch which was hiding in your sleeve, one old Parsi woman came to me in Bombay. Satya Sai Baba used to stay at her place. And she told me that one day when he has gone into the bathroom, just out of curiosity, I looked into his suitcases. They were all full of watches. I could not believe that this man is deceiving. She said, I kicked him out. I told him, never again in my house. I cannot be a partner of any kind of fraud. She told me, I am an old woman. Nobody listens to me. They think I have gone senile. I have come to you, perhaps you can do something about it. I said, I have been challenging Satya Sai Baba. That this is stupid when the country is dying of starvation. Produce more food out of your miracles. Bring clouds to Hyderabad where the Shankaracharya of Puri is going to enforce a woman to be burnt alive on his husband's funeral pyre, only then clouds will come. And Satya Sai Baba is not far away from Hyderabad. Bring clouds to the Hyderabad. Do some real work. All that he produces is S. And he gives the S and you think it is great. And it is so simple that any street magician can do it. In fact, the more experienced street magicians can do it in a far better way and many more things than he is doing. As a magician, I have no object, no objection. But he should not pretend to be a spiritual man. It is not only a question of a single person to pretend to be spiritual while he is not. The question is that he attracts thousands of people, mediocre people, who believe that this man of miracles may impart something to them, may lead them to the ultimate truth. Ijaku is right. Don't bother about supernatural powers, three gifts of vision. The one thing essential now is to recollect your mind, to attain the fundamental, the very root of your being. Having arrived at the root, you need have no worry about the accidentals. In time, you will find that you are self-provided with all these accidental gifts and powers. On the other hand, so long as you have not got the root, you will not be able to acquire such gifts and powers through study and learning. A very honest man, saying simply two things. One, turn your lights in. Second, don't be concerned with accidentals, non-essentials. Third, as you become an enlightened man, miracles follow you like a shadow. You don't have to do them. They happen around you in your very air. And the greatest miracle is that whoever comes in contact with the awakened one tastes for the first time the sweetness of awakening, the grace of awakening, and a longing arises in him to be a Buddha himself, which he has never thought about. The greatest miracle in the world is to bring people to their recognition of Buddhahood. A Zen poet wrote, in the bottomless bamboo basket, I put the white moon in the bowl of mindlessness, I store the pure breeze. These are true miracles. They happen on their own in your silences of the heart. Second Sai wrote, "This grasp, all is dust." The sermon for today, land, seas, awakened, you walk the earth alone. Everything is dust once you understand yourself. And the moment you understand yourself, you find your aloneness so beautiful, so precious, that you don't get lost in the crowd and their stupid ideologies. You become for the first time an individual on your own. You are no more a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian. You simply belong to the universe. You are a universal man. This is the greatest miracle. Another Zen poem by Nen Sornan. Only genuine awakening results in that. Only fools seek sainthood for reward. Lifting a hand, the stone lantern announces daybreak. Smiling, the void nods its enormous head. What Nenso is saying is, why you are trying to seek to be a saint? Because saints will be rewarded in heaven. All your virtues are just making a way towards paradise where you will be provided all kinds of pleasures. What your saints are torturing themselves for, hoping that the more they torture themselves, the closer is paradise. And what paradise provides? Naked young women, rivers of wine, no work, everybody is given an harp, drink the wine, find out a girlfriend, play on the harp, alleluia. That's all that is happening in paradise. And I say to you that your saints will look very hilarious. Here they have been torturing themselves, they have become ugly, rotten, and those girlfriends in heaven, they are plastic, because they have been serving since eternity. I have never heard that anybody goes out of employment they remain always stuck at the age 16. Time goes on, but they don't grow. Only plastic can do that. Plastic never grows old, never dies. And the descriptions in the scriptures make me convinced, because those girls don't perspire. Skin is bound to perspire. That is the very life of the skin. It is its breathing. Every pore of the skin is breathing. And there is a reason why it perspires. Perspiring, it keeps your temperature the same, whether there is cold outside or hot outside, it doesn't matter. Your life is dependent on your temperature. From 98 degrees to 110, just 12 degrees is your life span. If you go beyond 110, you have gone beyond. Perspiration keeps you below, because it keeps the heat engaged. The perspiration becomes evaporated, so the heat becomes engaged in evaporating the perspiration and forgets you completely. It is a miracle. When in cold you start shivering, do you know for what? Even you start chattering, this is all to keep you warm. I have heard stories, I don't believe, that people who have false teeth, they leave them in the bathroom, but in cold, those teeth, out of old habit, start chattering. I don't know. But there are stories on record, just an old habit, and your shivering keeps you warm. Otherwise, you will fall in your temperature, and that will be again death. Your life span is just between those 12 degrees. Now those beautiful ladies in the paradise never grow, always remain young. And I cannot conceive that they have been serving for millions of years all the saints, and still nobody calls them prostitutes. They are the only eternal prostitutes. And these saints are dreaming about them. Here it is prohibited. You cannot drink wine. It is a sin by many religions. But the same religions provide rivers of wine. There is no need to drink, you can drown. Here every religion goes on working on every child that do something, otherwise you will be a hobo. And what are your all the saints doing in paradise? Hobos. Playing on their harp. It does not matter. Hippies were simply repeating your hobos, playing their guitar and doing nothing. And it is such a boredom to conceive that for millions of years now, you will be just playing on your harp. There is nothing else to do. You can have as many women you want. You can drink as much alcohol as you want. Perhaps to make up to date, God may have provided new drugs, LSD. Heroin. Hashish. Because the saints have earned by their virtue. This is their reward. A genuine search is not for any reward. It is just to know who I am. Why I am, what I am. It is a pure search to be acquainted with oneself, because that is the only way to find some connections with the universal spirit. Nenso has a beautiful metaphor. He says, all these saints, what they are doing, declaring their saintliness, is like lifting a hand, the stone lantern, announcing daybreak. And all over there is darkness. It is not a daybreak. These saints are just stone lanterns. They are not the sunrise. And the universe smiles at these fools. The void, immense void, nods its enormous head is smiling. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, if you were to use just one word to describe the essence of true religiousness, one word that is the key to being able to drop whatever has been and simply live one moment at a time, what would that one word be, Manisha? that one word is in. Just in. And all the mysteries open before you. But before you go in, because nobody knows you will return or not, it is a miracle that everybody returns every day. What more miracles do you want? Jesus raised only one man out of dead. I have to do double work. First I have to tell you to die. 10,000 sannyasins die every night. And then the great work has to be done to bring them back to life. And the miracle is they all come back. Not a single one is left behind. So before that inward journey, the dangerous journey, because one may not like to come back, few laughs are necessary. So in your inner journey, you go laughing. At least a smile. When pretty Angela Carotti goes out on her first date, her parents tell her to be home by 9 o'clock. She gets in at 9:15 with her hair messed up and her makeup smeared. Mama Carotti asks her how the evening was. Angela rolls up her eyes and says breathlessly, "Mamma mia." The next night, Angela goes out again with the same boyfriend. Her parents tell her to be back by 9. At 10:30, Angela gets home with her clothes disheveled and her hair in tangles. Opa Carotti tells her off for being so late and asks if she has had fun. Rolling her eyes up, Angela says, "Mamma mia." The following night, Angela gets home at 2 in the morning. Mama and Papa are furious. So cries Mama, "Now what are you have to say for yourself?" Angela looks down and says, "Me, Mia, Mama." Fanny and Frankie, two Italian school friends, graduate from college at the same time. Fanny's dad gives him his son a solid gold wristwatch, and Frankie gets a pearl-handled pistol from his father. The friends meet and admire each other's presents so much so that they decide to trade them. That evening at dinner, Frankie checks the time. "Where did you get that gold watch?" asks his father. He listens to Frankie's story with a look of disbelief on his face. "What's the matter with you?" shouts his dad. "Some day you get married, and some day you find your wife in bed with another guy. And what are you gonna do? Look at your watch and say, hey, how long you gonna be?" "Darling," whispers Johnny, "you are the only one for me. I love you. I need you. I can't live without you. Please," gasps Julie, pushing the young man away. "Why? What is wrong?" asks a stunned Johnny. "I'm in such a playful, happy mood," says Julie, "and I don't want to get serious." "So?" smiles Johnny. "Who is serious?" Old Grandpa Goldberg walks into the St. John's Cathedral, looks around anxiously, and then sits down in a dark confessional box. "Father," says Goldberg to the priest, "I have been screwing a juicy blonde nymphomaniac 19-year-old girl twice a day for the past 3 weeks. "Good Lord, Mr. Goldberg," says Father Fungus, "but are you not Jewish? Why are you telling me?" "Why I am telling you?" replies Grandpa. "I am telling everyone." silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Close all the doors going outwards. Collect your whole energy in. Deeper, deeper, in the very center of your being is the heart of the whole universe. We are not separate islands. We are all one in this inner space. This inner space is eternal, immortal, knows nothing of life or death. Be well acquainted with it so that you can remember in your day-to-day activities don't forget the Buddha within. Express your Buddha in all your actions, in your words, in your silences, in your songs. But always remember you are a Buddha and behave. Nivedano. Relax, let go of the body, of the mind. You are just a watcher, a small light at the center of your being. But that light is connected with the center of the universe. It is from this center you get your life. This is the root that connects you with the universal soul. Blessed is this moment ten 10,000 Buddhas drowned into one consciousness. Blessed is thisness, this suchness, this silence. feel the silence. Feel the beauty of it. Feel the joy of it. Feel its universality. And in a single moment here now, you can prove Ijaku wrong. You can be a Buddha. You are a Buddha, just you have forgotten. Remember, remember. Nivedana. Come back. Gathering your experience, remembering your experience, sit down like a Buddha, this is your true nature. This is the meeting point with the universe. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.